This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Ryan, I was very excited to hear that there will be another Superman coming up to the Greg Cool. Tell us about that. Do you have a title? Do you have a...
No, I have nothing. I have only ideas.
Can you share any of those with us?
I can't. I wish I could.
We won't tell anybody. Just a little hint.
Well, if you don't tell anyone... No. Just that I know that... there are certain things that were established in this movie, certain aspects of, you know, the characters, the relationships of the characters, certain reveals and relationships, and a great sense of unresolve in the romantic dilemma that Superman faces. So, I'd like to, now that characters are established, I'd like to take an opportunity to bring in perhaps a more threatening element. Foreboding, terrible element to the I perhaps.
Do you see yourself sticking with canon or departing some more from canon? I mean, I know it's a fine line to walk between fans and new fans, but where do you see yourself?
I would probably take what I established, the character as it is established, the characters as they are established now in Superman Returns, and move from there. I'm, you know, having things that are referential or nostalgic are very special and very important to us who've grown up with the original, the Donner film, as well as George Reeves' interpretation of it and the comic book. But also, so there'll always be a place in my heart for those. But this will be the starting place, kind of like X-Men 1. I had to find a place to begin to re-educate. Or educate people who weren't familiar with that universe. Well, here there's a whole generation not familiar with Superman, and there was a lot of value in having him return to the Donner to a version of the Donner universe, but yet continue forward. And you know, it's always a delicate balance, particularly the character this steeped in history and this ubiquitous. He means something to so many people all over the world.
I think we lose the great James Karen.
Yeah. Yeah, because in the final moments, I looked at the sequences as they were in the picture between he and Martha Kent. And although they were a wonderful concept, the notion that Martha Kent, Superman's mother, had moved on, like Lois Lane in her own way, and it was just too much happening on the farm, and I wasn't getting to the Daily Planet fast enough for my taste. And so what I ended up doing in a final almost weeks before is removing three key scenes that existed in the farm between Martha Kent, Clark, and ultimately James Karen, and adding that scene that's in the movie. And doing a different transition than I had planned. Originally, I was going to transition from a baseball to the Daily Planet, and I did it differently. I harked back to the usual suspect, ding, 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 and then just cut to the city, you know, technique of just getting you there with a cut as opposed to a transition.
Were you surprised that Greek you picked up over the paranoid mumbling through the American Bible?
No, not at all. I mean, you know, every time you, particularly now in times, you know, because of war and because the United States is under a lot of scrutiny, and you have lines like that, you know, and people said, oh wow, you had him say truth just, but you didn't have him say the American way, and I had him say the lead in, so I felt that was very patriotic. I am fiercely patriotic. I also have to remind people that even in 1978 when Superman said, I'm here to fight for truth, justice, and the American way. They did make humor of it. She said, you're going to end up fighting every politician in Washington. He's like, you don't really mean that, Lois, and et cetera, et cetera. So that kind of was a... I think he's a global superhero. I think his power and his ubiquitousness and what we've seen overseas as we've opened the picture in various countries, it's been extraordinary, that he is such a global and ubiquitous superhero that... That you know, if you just say truth, justice, in the American way, you're gonna have a, it's gonna sound strange to people.
On the token, have you heard feedback-wise, playing really well to Americans, but then the iconic American character playing overseas? Is there anything that you're hearing?
It's playing huge. Unexpectedly, actually, we've only opened in probably 65% of our territories outside of the United States for a third of the time and we've already crossed the 100 million mark. We're one of the largest openings in China. It's a phenomenon. In Europe, in countries in Europe, and Asia, I'm trying to think of where else. I mean, I can't give you specific. I mean, it's a bunch of data, but much that surprised us. We did not expect that, and that's been exciting. In fact, the biggest record-breaking IMAX theater in IMAX's entire history was in China. It was like $19,000 in a day. I guess they ran it around the clock. But also Europe, yeah.
Why do you think the characters resonated so well outside the United States, especially particularly China?
I think because over the years, I think these great American superheroes, like any great kind of mythology that begins someplace, like a good rock band that begins in England and finally finds itself on the Ed Sullivan Show, it takes a little while. I think because Superman is the first superhero, because he is the ultimate immigrant, and because he's ultimately a really cool character. He has great powers and flies and is very virtuous. I think that, and he's been around for 70 years, something about his iconography has grown, and I think it's just that. I mean, I'd like to say there's some Judeo-Christian allegory that also is in play, but that wouldn't explain the success in Asia as much as it has in Europe. And again, it's not in all territories, but they're I was surprised. I'm just expressing because it's a place where you say you're like, ugh, this American, you know, you're going in thinking, oh, my American superhero, and you're trying to explore an American superhero. Are they going to embrace him in France? Are they going to embrace him in Korea, where in the first week it was like, and continues, places like that. It's very surprising. I just think it's just because he's grown, you know, he's just gotten more famous over the years, is what I'm saying. It's the short answer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the Spear of Destiny, Scourging of the Pillar, Death and Resurrection. Yeah. Hmm? Because in the Donner film, they you know, the origin story of Superman was always always reminded me of Moses, you know, a little baby that was sent down the river to sort of fulfill a destiny, and like the baby Kal-El, and here with a Superman who is returning to a society that misses him, and has these qualities, and has been sent by a father to a world, and as Brando said in the original Superman, it is for this reason I send them, you, my only son. I mean, I didn't invent these iconographies; they predated me, but they're you know, I grew up a Jewish kid in a Catholic neighborhood. I went to a Christian youth club as a kid. I'm not particularly religious, but you grow up in this Judeo-Christian culture. So these icons and images, and the mother holding the son in the burning ship, you know, in a certain way. I mean, it harks back to, you know, a certain artistic interpretations of certain events, and the story itself became it was all kind of based around what Marlon Brando said in the original film and the notion of behind the article that Lois Lane wrote, mostly out of spite, why the world doesn't need Superman. And she starts drawing in this mythical article I had in my head, she was drawing messianic relationships. So that kind of became the impetus for, you wrote that the world doesn't need a savior, but every day I hear people crying for one, falls to earth and, you know, facing the bald demon being stabbed, falling into the, instead of ascending to the Father, falling into the ocean, but still hearing the voices and being with the Father who gives him reassurance that there's a greater thing happening, which is all stuff that plays into notions about the sequel. Furthering the story, I should say.
Do you see Superman's world expanding in the movies
I think they're colliding now. I think if I run into Sam Raimi and I run into each other more event, or, you know, what do you mean colliding? Meaning combining characters?
Interacting.
Eventually, but not now, not yet. I think if you, it's not ready, you're not ready to do that yet. The worlds are so distinct and so different. Sam has created such a distinct world with Spider-Man. Chris Nolan has recreated such a distinct world with Batman. And we tried to do the same here with Superman, and also I with X-Men previously, which felt... So right now, I wouldn't want to mush those universes together. I think you'd say... You'd dilute them.
We do...
Wonder Woman... Well, see, Wonder Woman to me doesn't... Wonder Woman lives in the 40s. So... But they may choose to set it in contemporary. I would set it in contemporary if I made Wonder Woman.
Yeah, exactly.
Because to me, they're where Donner set Superman the movie in New York. He made that Metropolis. I wanted to create Metropolis. I wanted Metropolis to be a nod to the late 1930s origin of the comic. So by mentioning Gotham, it was kind of a way of saying these are these mythical worlds, just like the opening title sequence of Superman Returns is kind of like the planets of the DC universe, you know.
Yes. And when did you get the idea to do the cover of Action Comics number one?
Very early on. Even though in the Action Comics cover, he's actually shaking a car, and shaking the crooks out of a car, I knew I wanted to have a sequence where Superman would be holding up a car, and we would do it in real life, and we did it on the streets of Sydney. It was very precarious. I'm going to try to make a smaller film before this. Unfortunately, that's not a smaller film. So we're going to hold that. We're going to hold on to that.
You said that you were doing X-Men and X-Men 2. You're trying to make a smaller film. And then X-Men 2 and Superman.
Well, I did the series House. Yeah. So that was... I did this... the pilot... Not only did I direct the pilot for House, but I'm an EP on it, and I directed the first episode to break in the L.A. crew. So that was... House was actually quite... was not a full feature, but it was like a small feature undertaking. So... That House gave me the opportunity to do that, and it's so far been wonderfully successful.
And any plans to return to TV or stay with TV?
I absolutely would love to, yeah.
Any ideas?
I don't know yet. I might make a deal to do it, to develop some television, and I might like to go back and direct some House, because I just love those.
Will there be a custody battle in the sequel?
A custody battle? Who would be the lawyer, you know? Yeah, RK sequence.
I remember that actually was quite extensive.
It's a $10 million sequence, yeah.
Exactly. Can you talk about some of the stuff that you were forced to or had to cut out that will end up on TV?
I was never forced to cut anything out. Everything I cut and added is my own choice in terms of cutting. So just so you're aware, I'm afforded that kind of freedom now, so for better or worse. Yes. I had the sequence, and it's where he returns to the shattered remains of his homeworld. There's some sort of symbolic moments in it. It's a very majestic sequence. It's one that somehow, in stepping back from it and seeing it in context of the whole film, as wonderful and neat and as it was, it felt like it belonged in some kind of 3D IMAX incarnation of the movie and didn't feel that it served the central story and thrust of the movie that you saw. So I cut it very late in the game. I just pulled it out. I don't know if I want to put that on the DVD. I may want to try to re-release the film, possibly in IMAX in a year, and maybe have them do a more elaborate 3D process on other aspects that they didn't have time to 3D-ify, and then 3D that sequence as well. That would be a personal fantasy. Whether the numbers make sense or not, it's very expensive to create those IMAX prints. They're complicated. But if we can pull it off, what I would do is I would create more 3D material and then add that sequence. I'd subtract some of the movie, and I might reorganize. I don't know what I would do with the rest of the picture, but I would make more 3D sequences, more sequences 3D, and then I would add that sequence in 3D. Because when you look at it, if you saw the sequence, and maybe I'll put a piece of it on the DVD or something, but it's crying out to be 3D IMAX. It's got fragments of planets and things and scans and crystal ship and all this stuff, and Brandon in a different outfit. And it also wasn't the first way I wanted to show Superman either. I stepped back from it that way, and I thought seeing him in this way, it was troublesome enough to have him be so weak and to fall into his mother's arms, but for us to see him in this way first was weakening to me. brand, you know, and I didn't want to do that. I wanted, the first time, I wanted to hold you out there, see, get to know Clark, and then have that happen.
It seems like you have a lot of trouble finding and discovering this movie because you're talking about...
Last moments, yeah. Yes and no. Very often I do make radical... I believe a film is written three times. Once on the page, once on the set, and a third time in the editing room. This film, frankly, was very much together in the cutting room. I spent about the last 3 months every night of shooting, I would go into the cutting room, and I had a pretty solid version of it. It was just this beginning part of it. Return to Krypton, too much at the farm, and that was really it. There was a subplot that I removed, which was very small throughout the rest of the picture, but the picture was moving pretty well. I had a 2 hour and 45 minute version I screened for a bunch of friends and family, and that was when I stepped back and said, this movie is front heavy.
What was that subplot?
The subplot was that Lex Luthor somehow was responsible for Superman leaving the Earth. And it just didn't, and it involved Cal Penn's character a lot more. And it broke my heart because Cal Penn's great, and I had to remove some elements of Cal. He had, and these were tiny pieces. But once you remove them all, it kept the story cleaner. It kept it more, but that was, yeah, it would have been a neat thing, but it wouldn't, by the end, you would have been like, okay, you're monologuing. You know, so I pulled some of the monologuing out, and then but there was a different discovery on the farm. And originally, he didn't read the article in the Daily Planet, Why the World Doesn't Need Superman. Originally, he reads it in the basement. So I think that might be on the DVD, that scene as well.
Right
it has been written, yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I have to reread it. I sold it to NBC Universal, and they made a great hit show out of it.
But did it break your heart that it wasn't the version you did? I saw some new design.
No, I was very happy.
Brian.